death and the mini golf. I'm afraid of death. I admit it. Not having been brought up with a belief in an all-knowing, all-loving higher power, I wouldn't be surprised to learn that
the people running the universe are teenage girls in cotton golf shirts.
That the universe should be ordered around a convoluted obstacle course of crooked fairways, sand pits, and waterfalls, where the goal is to smack at things with a blunt instrument until you eventually disappear into a dark hole in the ground. Well, this is why mini-golf is a nihilist's favorite game. Here's Ken Babstock reading his poem Scale Model.
Scale Model. Tricked out in phantom gear, I imagined myself perfected, at least made better to the extent that I wanted nothing more and could hurt no one, which is when the world disappeared. Or the world's model displayed under glass with figurines passing through parks and purchasing things and boarding trains at dawn then transpiring, shattered or melted, receding back into the far hills of the false. The story of stories connected, and I among them, constructed of them, a notch in the wood of what's happened, wound down to a farce, just a face extemporizing the facts and making a meal of what it had felt like to be. What had it felt like? I remember a latch on a low gate, a kiosk on a platform that smelled of diesel and grease, a rowboat blown into reeds and the oars in the oarlocks. Remember my flesh on the flesh of another, but limbs needed moving and the air needed stitching with words, or just murmurs. It all demanded doing and seeing, removing the black box of immediacy to its place on a shelf near a pot of dahlias gathering dust and dying. Alone now, in the glow of an imperial mind, I curl to the chilled sense of being other, am bench, bolt hole, view of the Baltic coast, brother or crayon set, want to be implemented, bent to, used inside the watched life lived.
In this poem, the speaker is playing a nihilistic little game of his own.
And there's a sort of long tradition of poems in English that sort of attempt to speak from the other side, you know, speaking from death. So tonally, yeah, that's what I was going for, a kind of disembodied shade, almost like Dante, like a from the afterlife reporting back, or from the not here reporting on what it was like to have been here.
It's like the speaker is looking at the world through the wrong end of a telescope. It's a miniature world he sees. People going about their business, but both the people and the business so small they're like toys. Maybe it's easier to deal with that way.
Too often you attempt to get distance instead of being in the game, instead
right.
of actually golfing. You are attempting to sit up in a tree and watch yourself golf.
He is so right. Okay, let's risk it. There's one obvious place to wrestle with these crucial existential questions, and that is Ontario Place. Their mini green 8-hole golf course, to be precise.
Okay, go ahead.
All right.
Yeah, just put some juice on it, because it can't fly out of here. You just
right.
smack it, and it'll go bounce around in there and land somewhere, hopefully.
All right.
Nice.
I'm
sorry, you got nothing. Okay. Okay, on this hole, I'm gonna try and use foresight. I'm going to project myself into the future, and this is something that animals don't do, picture myself, you know, 24 seconds from now, watching the ball drop in a hole. All right?
Yeah, okay. Like, you know.
Oh, a bad shot. Oh, no, a decent shot.
Oh!
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 Oh. No. Ain't going to happen.
It is quite sad, you know, mini golf. Like, it's just endings over and over. It's like a little
exactly.
death at every hole.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like, you know, there's not only is there no grand plan other than to get the hell out of here when you're finished, but it's like little endings over and over again. You feel like you're playing, and then just at the moment when you feel like you're playing well, the ball disappears.
Maybe it's Notch's faulty hand-eye coordination that makes me bad at this game. The existential import of letting my ball drop in the hole is so great I can't quite do it. There's the whole grand story of who I am and what my life is all about that's still waiting to be played out. Or at least, as the speaker of Ken's poem would probably remind me, probably rather smugly, that's what I tell myself.
It's hard for the listener to see, but you've got stories connected, capitalized. And it kind of seems to me that your speaker is saying that there's kind of a self-importance to the way we conduct ourselves inside what to us is this kind of almost larger-than-life universe, the one we live in, that we've built ourselves and our world up kind of bigger than we are, whereas from the outside you can see how small it actually is.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. It's what we do to create meaning. It's what we've always, the sort of the history of the creation of meaning for us has to do with how good we are at making narrative, about making things connect. I think the voice knows that it's self-delusion, that we only retroactively overlay a narrative of logic and sense. Our lives moved in this way because of this, and this happened, and then this happened, and then I decided to do this, and that's the story of my life thus far, or even after the end of it. But really, we know now that life is not no such thing. You know, it's a bunch of fragmented, disjointed, meaningless sequences of smaller narratives that we, like I said, retroactively or reflexively overlay narrative on top of. And I think, yeah, I think the same thing happens when we think about death. We have to, otherwise it's terrifying. You know, it's terrifying. I think the voice admits it to itself. You know, the story of stories connected, and I among them. And then when it admits itself, well, what did it feel like? What had it felt like to be in the world? And then the list of things coming afterwards is really, it's just images, sensory images, memory, that are disjointed, but that's okay. Just by virtue of having put them in a sequence, that's that voice's little narrative of emotional touchstones that made up the fabric of a life that hopefully seems like it makes sense. So it's willful self-deception in a healthy way.
Ken and I come up against a fork in the miniature road, and it's unclear to me whether we should be heading left towards the miniature cow pastures or right towards the water wheel, which is set up to look like a mill for grinding miniature flour.
Which way? This way?
Yeah, right next to this little semblance of like the history of man's development in agriculture, this early irrigation system. So we're now traveling through not just sort of our own little mini narratives, but they've set up little allegories for the history of the species.
Do you feel like it's lost on the kid in the lemon yellow bathing suit?
No, she got it. Here's another lesson in perspective.
Okay.
From where we're standing, you know, it looks like sort of a highway underpass or overpass. We're golfing.
We're on the under.
Yeah, we're golfing on the underpass. But if we were sitting up in the tree up there, we'd see that this entire four course is in the shape of the numeral four.
You know what's ridiculous? I didn't notice that until you said it. No, I totally didn't.
That's what happens when you're too far in the world, you know? You miss things.
When you're feeling
everything and you're in the world bodily and fully alive to the moment, you miss the fact that it's actually a number four.
And did that add to your experience immeasurably?
Oh, God, yeah. It made me feel like God.
I am clearly missing the big picture. In the poem, there's a line that's puzzled me for a long time, and it goes like this.
Removing the black box of immediacy to its place on a shelf near a pot of dahlias gathering dust and dying.
Since Ken kind of is God, as far as this poem is concerned, I get the rare chance to ask the creator to explain himself, just this once.
What I am going to get you to do is tell me about black box of immediacy. Like, what kind of black box are we talking about?
It's an inversion of the idea of the kind of transcendental idea of the self exploding outward into nowness, you know, kind of dissolving into the now in a transcendental kind of harmonious way. Literally, when it first kind of came out of me while I was drafting the poem, I was just trying to make an image of what happens mentally when you are actually in the world, in all of its immediateness, when you're sort of devoured by the now. Then, in a way, perception, or not perception, but reflection and self-consciousness gets obliterated for a short amount of time. So the controlling I is kind of contained and obliterated within this mystery, within this black box, and kind of set aside while one is in the now. But then, you know, looking over the poem, rereading, I thought, black box, that's perfect, because it's also the image of the black box that they now put in planes that kind of record the data of what happened to be uncovered after the, if something were to happen. So it is a kind of a morbid image, but it's a little bit of a mystery, like maybe there's a black box that contains what it was like to be in the now when you were in the now and can recall it and reconstruct it, recall it and reconstruct it. of feel sorry for the narrator of that poem.
Really?
I'm starting to feel kind of sad for him.
How come?
Well, he's so trapped. He should never have started that poem. He should never have tricked himself out in phantom gear. I'm starting to feel a little sad for him, because he's trapped in his own... It's not just intellectual solipsism. He's having begun speaking. He can't stop speaking, but nor will he get anywhere.
Well, I guess it sort of seems like his reward at the end of the poem is that he no longer has agency. Like, he begins the poem imagining things and thinking things, and the paradox that towards the end of the poem is sort of about the demands, and the use of the word demands, that the world puts upon you when you experience it sort of physically and you experience it as an agent who acts upon it, versus the sort of freedom of being in a position where you can't act upon the world, and instead it's the world that acts upon you. It seems to me that the speaker feels that sense of agency as a burden, you know?
Yeah, I guess that's what we're talking about, is like the tradition of pessimism where Schopenhauer and characters like that who believe that consciousness was a burden, was almost like a disease or an affliction that we'd be best off without. The end of the poem is like the dream of being object.
Yeah.
The dream of finding an exit out of subjectivity and being pure object to be actually useful in the world, you know, without having to think about it. Like, imagine being a set of pliers. So yeah, and I guess that's what I meant by feeling sad for the narrator, because he is trapped. Once you entertain that notion, there's nowhere to go. There's no way out of it. You can dream of being an object, but the fact of dreaming of being an object is still making you a subject, because you're able to dream.
Right. Well, I guess that's where suicide and death are sort of like, it's the end of agency, you know? It's like, that's the ultimate thing you can do, to be like, consciousness is affliction and it's a burden and I don't want it, so I'm out of here, you know? Which sort of
strangely enough, most of those pessimists didn't commit suicide, though. Mm. They considered consciousness a burden, but suicide to be just as useless. Trying to find a way to live in spite of the burden of consciousness is somehow more interesting.
We're getting close to the end. The final challenge is the windmill hole, which we looped past earlier, but haven't actually had to confront until now, at the eighth and last hole. This hole is the do or die.
Okay, you don't think I want to go in one of the...
if you go up the gutter, you'll run right into the... See, it's walled off.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
You have to go up the ramp.
You have to go up the middle.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. I feel armed with foreknowledge.
Yeah, and don't worry about time. Just feel it in your bones. Don't try to time your shot. Oh! It was in and out.
Ready? Yeah. Oh!
Hey. That was a home run.
Oh!
And around the wheel. The Catherine wheel.
How did you do that?
I just felt it, like I said.
So it seems that in the end, feeling wins out. Try though we might to stand outside ourselves and see the idea of narrativity, or even of the self, as fictions. On the golf course, at least, it's the illusion that feels most alive. And of course, some cold, hard realities.
Okay, do some math with me.
3 and 2
is 5.
Yes.
4 is 9. 3 is 12.
16.
21.
26, 27.
5,
all right, 5, 9, 12.
14, 15, 19, 21.
All right.
Look for it on my tombstone someday. Pack up the moon and dismantle the sun, for alas, she could not beat Ken Babstock at mini golf.